Welcome to That 80s Show featuring one host who is now fucking deaf. I just blew my ears out. Dory.
How many years have you been doing this? And when I say this, I don't mean the podcast. I mean working in audio where you have headphones on all the time and yet you still do this.
I mean, it's really like sound guy preservation 101. Always have your headphones low and turn them up.
Yeah.
To where you need them. No, I just blasted that. I love our theme song.
That's great.
I love it. But my ears no longer exist. My nasal passages no longer exist because just before we started recording, I had extra strong, extra strong. Remember those extra strong Wilsons?
Totally.
I had some. It's the only nostalgia sweet you can buy anymore. Chappies and extra strong.
Don't they still have the musk ones as well? The Wilsons musk?
Oh yeah, those are good ones.
They taste like perfume.
They kind of taste like pink sweets.
With
we made
perfume.
Bad choices with perfume. Yeah. Because you can sometimes find pink sweets. Sometimes.
I haven't seen pink sweets in many years.
I mean, so when you want a little taste of nostalgia, you have a extra strong. And Chappies? Chappies don't taste like Chappies. Or maybe Chappies.
No. Chappies are crazy expensive, dude.
I know. That was like. I was like, that was a full currential denomination when I bought a Chappie. It wasn't even a portion of a denomination. It was a full one.
So we were recently somewhere where they were selling Chappies and my kid was like, oh, I want Chappies. I gave my kid 10 rand. They came back with 5 Chappies.
What?
I'm like,
that's, yeah, exactly.
Hold on a second.
That's what I'm saying.
Hold on a second.
5 Chappies.
That's 2 rand a Chappie.
How much were they selling Chappies for at the retro fair? Not 2 rand a Chappie.
I actually don't know.
They were selling them a lot. 2 fucking czars a Chappie.
I mean, you used to be able to get 2 for 1 cent.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's all gone wrong. Fuck you, Trump, and your tariffs.
Yeah, I blame that.
How are there tariffs on Chappies? How? How does that work? Whatever happened to predictability? I was going to start this off before I blasted my ears. I want to read you some opening lines from sitcom theme songs and see how many you can guess.
Oh.
Whatever happened to predictability where Chappies only cost 1 cent 50? Where's that from, Dory?
I actually don't know.
Full House.
Oh, right. Okay. I was never a big fan. But now that you've said that, I hear it.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got.
Making your way in the world.
You know the song.
I know, but I can't think what it is.
Cheers.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Show me that smile again. Show me that smile again.
Is it Growing Pains?
It is Growing Pains.
Yay.
And the final one is Let Me Give You. Well, you know this one. It's my favorite sitcom. I used to be sad. I used to be shy. You won't get that one. That's from Perfect Strangers. And finally, come on, knock on our door.
Oh, come on.
Ah, come on,
Three's
indeed.
Company too.
Come on, indeed. Dory, those are sitcoms we do know.
I read something the other day about Three's Company and how rude it was.
It's very rude. I think I read the same thing. It's not that Three's Company were rude, it's that you're rude. Because they actually went through it. They said Three's Company never showed, suggested, or any picadillos, any sex. They kind of was all wrapped in innuendo and we put it on it. Because they say it was actually never anything. Like,
oh, but the innuendo was
constant.
Oh, it was
strong. It was constant.
Yeah.
But we placed something on it.
That's actually so true now that I think about it.
John
Ritter.
John Ritter's character. What was his name?
Jack.
That's why I got confused, yeah. His character actually never once in the entire run of the show was actually had sex.
Yeah.
But
he was always flirting with both of them and making suggestions.
Yeah. Watch it again. Watch it again without a perverted mind. It's actually a lovely, lovely
sorry,
sitcom.
Sorry, too late. My mind's already too perverted.
Oh, indeed. I want to... so we know the sitcoms. We know the ones that made it. But of course, some sitcoms don't make it. I want to read you some. I'm inspired by an article on Cracked about some of the strangest TV shows of the 80s.
Have we not already discussed all of them?
All of them. I know, but you keep finding them.
I know Manimal's going to be in there.
Manimal was it, but I didn't put Manimal in because we've spoken of Manimal. These are
so
things
many times
we've never spoken about before.
Ooh.
These are brand new. Two of them are like early 1990, but I assume they started in the 80s, production, the 80s.
I'll forgive it.
Nearly Departed from 1989, starring Eric Idle. From Monty Python.
Yeah. So is it British?
American, actually. First mention of him today. He's in my movie recommendation. It followed the quirky premise of a British professor and his wife who die in a car crash, but they return as ghosts to their former home and find a new family living there.
Beetlejuice, anyone?
That's what I'm saying. The ghosts try to reclaim their place. Comedic tension arises between them and the oblivious new homeowners. Now, it's not clear if the homeowners knew the ghosts were there, if they engaged with the ghosts, or you just had the series of mishaps of the people missing the ghosts.
This is after Beetlejuice.
This is after Beetlejuice.
It's ridiculous.
It got cancelled after 6 episodes.
Okay.
An animated series. Last show we spoke about the Wonder Cube, the new Rubik's Cube, the Wow Cube.
Right. You know?
There was a, you know, they made a cartoon series and a breakfast cereal out of everything in the 80s. This one was called Rubik, the Amazing Cube, okay?
Wow.
From 1983. It was a magical Rubik's Cube. Listen how pointless thing is. As pointless as the Wow Cube. It was brought to life by the Rodriguez children who fell from an evil magician's cart and could speak, fly, and, oh no, sorry. Rubik the Cube.
Yes.
He fell from a magician's cart. And he could speak, fly, and use various powers only when the Rodriguez kids solved him. So when he was unsolved,
he was useless.
Useless. Solve him.
Okay. How often is a Rubik's Cube solved?
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I know there are some freaks out there who can do it.
Like that quickly?
Yeah.
Like these, like we always like, see those kids
like
on TikTok.
Like if you're in an emergency,
yeah,
and you're like, hang on, I have to quickly do this. You're in trouble.
If you're comparing at the time Sport Billy just put his hand in his bag. What am I pulling out? My hand's in my sack. What do I have? Problem solved. I'll figure it out. I put my hand in my sack. I take out a ball. It gets big. Okay? Right?
What were we talking about?
This is exactly what they used to do on Three's Company. I'm just telling you about Sports Billy. You've now gone and put some perversion of it. Sports Billy, I put my hand in my bag. Oh, I found an eggplant. What am I going to do with it? Okay?
Right.
That's what he could find in there. But not exactly now. Oh, no, terrible situation. We need to save the mudslide victims. And, oh, my cube, I can't solve it. Now everyone's dead. Fuck you, Rubik's Cube. Didn't last long.
I'm sure not.
Theme song was done by Menudo, the boy band Menudo.
I know Menudo.
Them of being ashamed. They were very, very abused, those poor boys. You watch a documentary about it?
No, I haven't.
You know, there's like a lot of documentaries come out about like boy bands of the specifically 90s, early 2000s.
I mean, were there any that weren't abused?
Where's Rodney? Now, think about 80s Rodneys. How many are there? Only one.
Who?
Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh.
They only did the pilot. Okay. It's a 14-year-old boy named Rodney Barnes. All right, who could magically summon his idol, Rodney Dangerfield, to show up and dispense life advice when teenage problems arose.
Was this written by Rodney Dangerfield?
I don't know, because he only appeared a few times. He delivered his trademark, I tell you, I get no respect. That used to fucking kill me every time. Every time he did that with his tie. Oh my God, I loved it. And then the rest of the episode focused on him navigating friendships, getting no respect, school dating, and family tensions. One episode.
Yo.
Listen, even in the late 80s, okay, so it actually came out in early 1990, a 14-year-old boy whose idol is Rodney Dangerfield.
So weird.
Idol.
So weird.
Idol.
Say it again.
And then, ooh, this one. A British sitcom, the absurd premise: Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun are living in a suburban 1938 home in Berlin next door to a stereotypical Jewish couple. the Goldsteins. It was done in typical in cheesy 1950s American sitcom. There was only the pilot was ever made. And it was whether they were going to do more, but Sky immediately canceled it. It got, there was so much whiplash, backlash, all the lashings from many, many a council saying this is the world's most tasteless situation comedy.
Oh my God, I'd love to watch it.
Called Hail Honey, I'm Home.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's bad, huh?
I need to watch that.
I know. There.
I mean, they got a pilot made.
I mean, they did something, but it was British. Sky TV at the time were buying what was called British Satellite Broadcasting. And this was kind of on the slate when they bought it. And Sky went, nope. No, that is not getting any further. Burn the masters.
Yeah.
Burn the masters. So that is Hail Honey, I'm Home. Listen, if we can find any clips of these, they will go up on That 80s Show SA on Facebook. Make sure you are liking that page. We're still on the Facebook bandwagon.
We are.
There's going to be a turnaround. Okay.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's going to be a turnaround. I don't remember when last I saw a friend's status update on Facebook. It's just ads and AI slop. But we are going. We are gunning on Facebook, Dory. I back it. The Zuck is going to make a turnaround. Brought to me another very interesting thing. So there is another 80s podcast that, are we friendly with it? Do we listen to it? I do listen to it. But you can't listen to it too much because it could be bad for us. It's called Everything 80s.
Right. I think that's the one that I've listened to a little bit as well.
That's it. At last check, we were above them in the 80s podcast rankings.
Just pointing that out, right?
You know, just saying that.
Just throwing that in there.
So listen, good show. Does a lot of educational stuff about the 80s. Not funny.
No.
No.
No one's funny.
No one's funny. He's like quirky. He's witty.
Mm-hmm.
Not funny. Very informative. So he actually put out an episode last week explaining the PG-13 rating in movies, right?
Okay.
And kind of like, a very interesting episode. It actually, cousin Louie and I, he got himself into trouble.
Yeah.
Because he wants his boys, good dad, he wants his boys to know 80s movies. So of course they know Back to the Futures, but you know, they're young. So he's got to make sure that they don't watch anything. You know, he's responsible.
Yeah.
Parents didn't give a shit what we watched in the 80s. We could watch anything. Yep. He doesn't want to see his kid. He don't want his kid watching Robocop see a man shot into meat, right? He doesn't want to see that, okay? He doesn't yet want to see his boys to see boobs, even in the most innocuous un-boob-related movies.
Yes.
So he's like very specific about it. But of course, he downloads a movie, Teen Wolf.
Okay. Are there boobs in Teen Wolf?
There are boobs in Teen Wolf.
Oh, of course.
Very inappropriate. So now we have this whole conversation about PG-13 and just that week. Everything 80s does an episode about PG-13.
Mm.
Of course. Now I know he listens to our show. So we're coming for him. I want to do a collab with him.
So right. Good. Okay.
And I don't hate him. We're doing the same thing. We're doing God's work. We're doing George Michael's work.
Right.
That's what we're doing. And it actually got me thinking. The thing about the PG-13 rating is that it came out in 1984, which was one of the best years in movies ever. And suddenly there's this new rating. So there was like, they had this focus on the type of movies they could make.
Okay. So what was there before?
1984, 85. Oh, you got to listen to the podcast.
Okay. I will.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, I remember watching National Lampoon's and being surprised when I saw so many boobs.
Yeah.
Because that was a children's movie. It really wasn't.
No, but that's the thing.
But it was marketed as a children's movie.
That's the thing.
It was like incest and boobs and so much inappropriateness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is a very unexpected link to Patrick Swayze in the whole thing. You got to listen.
Okay.
But just counter it. Listen to one of the episodes and listen to ours. So we balance.
Yeah.
We've got to stay above him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I didn't say where we're above him, but we're both top 10. Last check, eight.
Listen to it, then share it with everyone so that they don't download it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You download it and then tell other people.
Yeah.
So maybe you must send it to me so that I don't go listen.
Clever.
Yeah.
I'll play it to you now. Okay.
Cool.
But just if you listen to one of theirs, you got to listen to one of ours, right? We're 80s 9. Anyway, point is, I was like, let's talk about the 2 to 21 rating. Because like you can have PG-13, my guy. South Africa, we went one step further and had 2 to 20 fucking 1. Because America, they only went to 2 to 18. I don't even think that enforced
it. We had 2 to 19 on some movies, which was weird. But yeah, the 2 to 21.
Just think about that. Think about yourself when you're 21. In 1980 South Africa, there were certain movies you could not watch until you were 22 fucking years old. You were probably married with a child before you could watch some of the movies I'm going to talk about now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to guess at least one movie that's on that list.
Okay, let me tell you about it.
Yeah.
So it comes about, apartheid, South Africa, a whole bunch of fucked up stuff did. It wasn't necessarily all about gore, whatever. It was mostly about content.
Come on, it was mostly about sex.
Mostly about sex. We don't want sex corrupting people, mm-hmm. political content, interracial couples, things
yes.
like that.
Yes.
You're getting a 21 straight away. Straight away. So it was the old South African publications.
And censored.
And pieces censored.
Pieces
yes.
cut out.
Yes. So not only is it 2 to 21, yeah. we're taking some shit away.
Yeah.
Because you as a 21-year-old are not mature enough for this, okay?
Dude, we couldn't see what Nelson Mandela looked like.
That's a true story.
Yeah.
That's a true story.
They used to black out his face on newspaper articles.
There is a fantastic video I found on YouTube about TV in apartheid South Africa and some of the shows. Really, really good. Post that up. That 80 Show is at Facebook. Got it. We're backing Facebook, guys. We're backing it. Yeah. We'll bring it back. So, like we're saying, that if you were 2, watch whatever you want.
You're 1.
You're right. If you're 1.
Mm.
Whatever you want, watch the shit out of it.
Well, that's, I think, because a lot of mothers would take babies in their arms to movies.
To movies and smoke on them.
Yeah.
So it was basically, listen, it was shorthand for adult content only, extremely explicit sexual content, very strong violence or political themes that we did not agree with as the apartheid government. And so it was tasked, the Publications Control Board was tasked with protecting public morals and racial sensitivities.
Right.
Right. It started in the 70s, right through the 80s. It started getting a little bit more liberal because they went, okay, well, we can't have 2 to 21, but put some X ratings, some R ratings, but on really hardcore adult material, 2 to 21. I still remember on Mnet, 2 to 21 movies popping up.
Yeah.
In the early days of Mnet, only later did they start changing it to 19. But in the early days of Mnet, it was 2 to 21.
Well, I remember when Goodfellas was on at the movies.
Yes.
It was 2 to, I think it was 2 to 18 or 2 to 19. It was one of those, right? And my friend and I wanted to go see it, and we were, I think, 15 or 16. But my friend was really tall.
Ah.
So she went and got the
so
tickets.
So you went on her shoulders and
no,
her
no, no,
trench
no.
Coat.
So she went and got the tickets because she looked. She could pass for 18. I could not. And she went and got the tickets and we went to go watch it. And we were so impressed with ourselves that we managed to sneak in.
That's good sneaking. My sneaking was whenever there was a movie my best friend and I wanted to go watch, we always used to go to, there was a cinema, like one abandoned. So you all, like there were lots of cinemas before. Every mall had a cinema.
Yeah.
Right? And there was obviously at Cresta, they had the big cinemas, the multiplex.
Yeah.
And like a couple of blocks away at this a mall called Northcliffe Corner, right?
I know Northcliffe Corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was the spillover mall. You could go there. They had putt-putts. They had like an arcade. And yeah. they had a cinema that only showed 2 movies a day.
Okay.
But the way they did it is that you could basically get into, if you came up a different stairwell, you could walk. So because it was such a small cinema, you'd buy your tickets.
Right.
From the ticket person. And they would be the same person that tears your ticket. Okay, and on some days, we'd then still go and serve your popcorn.
Right.
But if you decide, I'm going to take in my own snacks because I'm sneaking into an underage movie, you could actually come out the right way and just walk straight into the cinemas without the person seeing you with no tickets.
Right.
So you'd either go, okay, if there's lots of people in the movie, you got to sit on the steps or you got to wait to go find your movie. They did used to do checks back in those days.
Oh my God, the guy with the torch.
Remember? They used to do that. That's how popular movies were. We used to sneak into them.
Guy with a torch saying, can I see your tickets? Yes. Like on a bus.
Yes. Tickets.
Like a movie conductor.
Yeah. There were. And so you just had to like kind of dodge that guy. So that's how we used to get into all the 2 to 21 movies.
Yeah.
So some of the examples of 2 to 21 movies classified were European erotic films shown in small continental cinemas.
Okay.
hardcore pornographic features allowed in adult cinemas after 1983. Very specific.
Okay.
So again, we're both on porn. Some extremely violent exploitation films imported on 35mm reels.
You?
That's again. And then the Emmanuel movies.
Okay. What, 9.5 weeks isn't in there?
So,
yeah.
Some of the movies, Caligula.
Okay, I saw Caligula in an independent movie house.
A continental movie house.
No, there was a man in a trench coat sitting a few rows behind me. It was very unnerving.
One of those,
yeah.
Caligula.
But the Caligula that I saw, I'm actually convinced was cut.
Okay.
Because it wasn't as hardcore as I've heard it is.
Okay.
So maybe, I think it was cut.
Maybe your tolerance is just...
I mean, it is, but...
Could be. The Story of O.
Okay, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. So The Story of O, based on a book about a young fashion photographer named O, who's taken by a lover, Renee, to a secluded chateau where she's subjected to a series of sexual rituals and training in submission. As she is passed from Renee to his older stepbrother, Sir Stefan. No, I don't know if Renee is a sir. Mm. O's submission becomes more intense and she begins to embrace her role, equating her obedience with love and purpose. So through this, she has to wear symbolic clothing, obedience training, collars and insignia, and name anonymity.
Anonymity, hence, which is why O.
O.
Right.
Right. So basically like 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Deep Throat, naturally. Yeah. Okay, couldn't do that. Certain Italian giallo films, you know those. Those are like major exploitation, major violence. And Jocko the Bushveld.
What?
No, I just made that up because I thought it was quite funny after all. not Jocko the Bushveld. Although. And so anyway, 2-2-21's rolling until about 1994, where they go, come on. Let's be adults here.
Yeah.
Okay, people can watch Deep Throat if they want. And then they just went into the 13, 16s and 18s, eventually dropping the 18, and was formally disbanded in 1996. But movies like Basic Instinct was the last movie that still had a 2-2-21 rating that came out in 1992.
Yo, the controversy.
Oh, and you know, thank God for E.
The
late night on E's.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that could go so many ways. The letter E, because without it, people would just say, I don't know what they say. But thank God for the channel E, so we could see Emmanuel and realize.
Over and over and over again.
It's like, really, it's not that good, guys. It's like, you're 21.
Really not.
Anyway, good for us. Good for 2-2-21. And long may it be discarded to the annals of history.
annals, perhaps?
I did that on purpose.
No, you did.
Yo, what would this show get?
Yo.
No, we can't do 2-2-50. We're very much marked explicit adult-only content.
Mm. And we're really not that bad.
No, we're not that bad.
Except for the C word episode. That was a lot.
And that was you. So, you know, listen, the other thing Dorian and I have realized that we are, you know, as well as being the number 8 last check 80s podcast in the world, we are ranked, by the way. I mean, I think we are number 1, but rankings.
Yeah.
We also become tastemakers, right? People release a new podcast based in the 80s. They say, could you guys take a listen and talk about it in your show? You know,
we're so honored, actually.
We're kind of like are we Barry Ronger? Is this what's happened?
We are the Barry Ronger of the new millennium.
You know, so that's where we are. We got sent a podcast.
You be Barry, I'll be wrong.
Oh, Dory, the good friend of ours, Barry Ronger, shame the late Barry Ronger was a good friend of ours.
Was.
Dory, we're going to, I'm going to throw over to you because you're going to tell us a story of a podcast because it's something that was very close to your heart.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I saw you posted up this week, people go, oh my God, I didn't know these guys had a podcast. And then you're, well, we're the first to listen. So
That's why we're here. We're here to spread the gospel.
So let's do it. This week, Dory's media recommendation is a podcast.
It is. And I mean, in retrospect, a long overdue podcast because there is so much history in this topic. And it exists on the South African History Archive. There's literally a website called South African History Archive, saha.org.za.
Oh, yes, I know that one. Yes.
Okay, there's a lot of cool stuff on there. Unfortunately, the design of the site is a little bit retro, but there's a lot of cool content on there. Yeah, I suppose. They have a section on there for Shifty Records. Now, I've spoken about Shifty Records before on the show.
Indeed.
Because they did an episode with Benji Moody on his podcast. But now, and I think that this has been a long time in the planning, they have their own podcast called The Rest is Shifty.
Love it.
I have to tell you, well done. I believe it's been done by our friends at Solid Gold Studios.
They're somehow
I'm assuming that they're involved in the editing because it is beautifully edited together. It really is. And what I love about it, okay, I do know the people involved. So slight bias. Okay, I'll admit some slight bias. Plus Shifty was a big part of my world growing up when I was at university. I was involved with campus radio. Shifty kind of evolved into a record label called Tick Tick Bang. And we used to go to Tick Tick Bang and get music for the campus radio.
Yeah.
But Shifty's history is phenomenal. And I'm not going to tell you any of it because you have to actually go and listen to the podcast. But I will tell you that I've listened to the first two episodes of this podcast. Like I said, beautifully edited. They use their music. So you hear the songs. Presented by Warwick Sony and Lloyd Ross. Now, Lloyd Ross, you might not have heard of him, but I promise you, you know of him because he has had a hand in so many things over the years. Do you remember the series Faith Stat?
Yes.
He did the music for it, the theme music.
I think you've told me this before. I've told you this.
Like legendary things. Now, these guys, they're old friends. They've been friends longer than we've been friends.
That's a long time.
It's a very long time. This listening to the podcast, it sounds like they're just sitting at a brine chatting about the good old days. It's such a relaxed conversation, but they are both, it's like the opposite of our podcast. They know so much. They're
researched.
Well-researched, wealth of knowledge. Well, I have to tell you, Warwick seems to have this crazy memory that he just brings up stuff in his brain that even Lloyd's like, what? I didn't know that. Or, I can't believe you remembered that.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's really cool. Now, Warwick was involved with a few projects, but the Kalahari Surfers probably being the one maybe some people have heard of. Now, the episodes I've listened to, the first one is about the Cherry Face Lurchers, which I have mentioned on the show before. Not a widely known band.
I think, am I not mistaken, ages ago we had Damon Calvari talking about them.
Of course we did, because Damon Calvari
go back way back.
Introduced me to the Cherry Face Lurchers. And he is, I mean, literally, I would not have known about them without him. Yeah. He dragged me to their gigs, which were phenomenal. I used to love them so much. I came to them a little bit late. I missed their Jamison days because their most famous album is called Live at Jamison's. They used to perform at a club in, I think it was Hillbrow?
Yeah.
Called Jamison's. And that was their thing. And they recorded a live album. But then they also recorded an album called The Other White Album, which only came out in cassette in the early 90s.
Yes. Was it white? No, honestly, like white cassettes were like, those were.
It might have been actually.
Yeah, you have to.
It might have been. I can't remember. That whole album has been remastered and is now available on all streaming platforms.
Oh, wow.
And it is so beautiful to listen to. But the podcast about it is, you should listen to the podcast about it first before you listen to the album. Yeah. Because it gives you context to all the songs. It gives you history. It gives you background. If you don't know who James Phillips was, it'll explain it. It's a wonderful journey through a not so well-known part of South African music history. It really is. But what really blew me away was episode 2, which was about San Komodo. Now, dude, I've been sleeping on San Komodo since they existed. I've heard of them. I was unfamiliar with the music.
Right.
This episode blew me away. What an amazing story. What amazing music. I freaking loved all the songs that were played in the podcast. Like, how have I never listened to this before? I feel like I was in a coma. And I've just woken up.
Well, that's and then 80s band.
Yeah. So, well, I think they even started in the 70s, like late 70s, and existed until, I think the early 90s, but yeah, primarily through the 80s. Now, they were playing gigs like, you know, during apartheid. They were playing at certain places where they could play, but nobody had heard of them. Lloyd discovered them and said, "You guys are amazing. I want to record you." They were based in Lesotho.
Oh, wow.
Okay. They're a Lesotho-based band. And this is how the whole Shifty thing came about. And this is what I want to show you. Lloyd decided that they needed to have a mobile studio, something that could move around. And that is how the mobile Shifty, as in it can shift around, studio. That is Lloyd, a picture of Lloyd. We'll put this on our Facebook page. This is all from the South African History Archive website. A picture of a very young Lloyd Ross standing there and leaning up against one of those old style '80s caravans.
Those old, what?
When I say '80s caravan, you've like got a you mental know image. It, yeah. It's white. It's got a blue stripe down around the side. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Those roundish windows.
What was the name of the brand? Oh, it's such a famous brand. Because Fenster's got the orange brand.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes. Oh, the blue one. Yes.
Now, they made it a studio.
Oh, wow. Dory just showed me a picture. Yeah. So basically they've stripped the inside of it.
Yeah.
And they've got a full on mixing desk.
Yeah.
That's a full size multi-channel mixing desk inside the caravan. Wow. I assume on the other side must be a recording booth. Must be, yeah.
You know what we need to do? I'm going to get Lloyd on the show at some point.
Oh, fantastic.
Because he needs to answer our questions. That is the one thing about this podcast. I love it. It's made me have more questions.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to have a chat with him. And it's just, there's so much that was going on in the 80s that we didn't know.
Yeah.
And look, they do touch on Warwick even calls it the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
In the podcast.
Yeah.
The background of apartheid through all this, what people were dealing with through all this.
Especially around, that period of like this, you had this kind of proxy war going on in Angola, of which we're like, yeah, you see, we told you there's communism on our doorstep. That's why we are this way.
Yeah.
And then the state of emergency, and everyone knows all of it's just absolute bullshit, but nobody can speak up against it because you're going to get taken away in a yellow van.
Yep. Check out The Rest is Shifty. So cool. I think there's 3 episodes, maybe 4 by now, out. I wasn't even going to listen to the Sankamore episode because I was like, I don't know this band. I'm so glad I did.
That's good because I think it talks to the hosts. They can kind of go like, don't know, don't have the context, but they give it and now suddenly new fan.
Well, I mean, just the storytelling in it is so amazing. They went into the story of the main guy from Sankamore, like his family story. It's fascinating. You've got to listen to it.
Now, yeah, because we got sent the first 3 episodes. You said you think there's 4.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I know 3 are live. I'm not sure when more will be coming out.
Yeah, so there are 3 episodes live. I do see it here on Apple, so I assume it's on all the podcast platforms.
Yeah.
It is called The Rest is Shifty. You got to listen to this. And you know what? Audio only, no video.
Yep.
We're leading the movement on audio-only podcasts. But listen, that's great. And I haven't listened to them yet, but I actually just wanted to wait to hear your recommendation.
Yeah.
Because if you're into it, then I go, okay, cool. I'm not wasting my time. So, and not like I thought I would anyway.
No.
Comes from a lot of good people. Now, tell me something. Obviously, you knew the people involved. I'll go into it cold. I know nobody. Yeah. Is the appreciation the same? Obviously, you know the people, but like me not knowing anybody, would I appreciate it just as much?
I think you would if you're just curious. First of all, just the way it's so interesting. And I mean, the fact that there's so many things in there that you will find interesting. For example, what Warwick tells in the Sankamore episode is there's a reason that we got TV so late in South Africa. It's because so much budget went into radio.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of history about that kind of thing. I think you're just going to find a lot of interesting facts in it. And they are entertaining to listen to. And they're funny. You can hear that they're old friends.
Yeah, that's good.
They've got this rapport and everything. So it's really, really, really enjoyable.
That YouTube video I told you about TV in South Africa is that, so obviously South Africa was, I think in it they said Antarctica got TV before South Africa. They were like, no, we're never going to put Africa. It's a TV in South Africa and probably putting money into radio because you can control
it. It was also because the South African government thought that it was the devil.
That was a point. But what happened is there was the moon landing and they went, well, how the fuck did we miss this? We've got to put together a commission.
Mm.
1969 to 1976, took them 7 years to decide to bring TV to
just in time for Willy Bonny.
Oh, yes. And the Finia Hicks. Fantastic recommendation. The new Naked Gun's out, right?
Ah, yes.
But
all I'm hearing about the new Naked Gun is the relationship between Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson.
Which you always...
That's all I'm hearing about.
You always worry when that's a takeout because I go... Yeah. They're bearing the lead.
Yeah.
The movie's not doing that. It's not as good. We got to, you know, so I always worry about that. Spaceballs, obviously, they're doing a sequel. And you kind of go, there's conversation going, is the spoof and parody movie back? Right?
Mm.
Which for me is like, love it.
Yeah.
Any spoof, any parody, Hot Shots, Top Secret, All the Naked Guns, Spaceballs, all the, I fucking love them. But I missed one. Because if you had told me, this movie came out in 1983, of course you don't watch it, then you discover it later. If you had told me that there was a spoof movie starring the Pythons, some of Mel Brooks's collaborators, Cheech and Chong, the guys from The Young Ones.
All of them?
And David Bowie.
What?
I would have said, inject it in my veins.
Yeah.
Surely no such movie exists like that. So it's kind of framed as, is this a Python movie? Is this a Cheech and Chong movie? What is this movie? It is a movie called Yellowbeard.
How have I never heard of this movie?
Dory, up until 2 weeks ago, I'd never heard of this movie. So it starts out, basically, it's framed as when cocaine budgets exceeded continuity budgets, and someone decided to make a film that was part Python, part Mel Brooks, part Cheech and Chong, and 100% not sure where the fuck to go with it, you get Yellowbeard. So Graham Chapman from Monty Python, he's friends with Keith Moon, and they're drinking one day. And Keith Moon goes, you know what you guys should do? A Monty Python movie about a pirate. And Graham Chapman goes, yeah, well, we're fucked. So I think that's a fantastic idea. And he goes, you know what? In fact, I'm going to give you some money to make a movie about a pirate, right?
Produced by Keith Moon.
Well, funded.
Okay.
He got some, they got some money. And he's like, well, fuck it. I'm going to, they tried to get Keith Moon to star in the movie. Keith Moon wouldn't do it. Keith Moon from The Who.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, no, I'm going to do it. But anyway, they based one of the pirates is called Moon. And let me read you the full list of people that are in this movie, right? So it's about a pirate. He's a notorious pirate. He robs all the ships. He robs all the Spanish ships and he steals a treasure, right? And he's one of the most dangerous, violent, notorious pirates. And they actually bust him down for tax evasion and they throw him in jail. But while he's in jail, everyone is now, he's got hordes and hordes of treasure that they're looking for. And only he knows where the map is. So this is the story of the movie. So it stars Graham Chapman, of course, from Monty Python. Peter Boyle.
Okay.
All right. So he's from Young Frankenstein. Everybody loves Raymond. He's Raymond's dad. Marty Feldman.
I don't know that name.
He's on a silent movie for Young Frankenstein. He's got the weird eyes.
Okay.
Eric Idle.
Love him.
Also from Monty Python. Madeline Kahn.
Okay.
She's fantastic. John Cleese, Cheech and Chong, and David Bowie makes a cameo in this movie. Plus a shitload of other people.
You mentioned the Young Ones.
Yes. One of the guys, the tall guy with the dark hair from The Young Ones, he's in it, but he gets killed straight away. There are so many walk-on people. This is one of those movies where they just went, so they started writing it. People came in, people went out. Can you imagine that cast of people trying to control them into anything coherent?
And you said there was a large cocaine budget.
Huge cocaine budget. Even in the making of documentary, Tommy Chong actually at one point speaks very openly about how everyone's just taking cocaine right through the movie.
Not even weed.
So you can imagine. Actually, realize Tommy Chong, super good looking guy. back in the days. Huh. He really was when he's like, so he's done up as like a Spanish conquistador.
Okay.
Right? So it's actually a very good looking guy. I didn't think that. Yeah. So we pick up Yellowbeard is in jail. He now needs to get out. He does escape. But they let him escape because they know that once he escapes, he's going straight for his treasure.
Yeah.
So now all these different people are following him.
Shenanigans
to get to the treasure. It's really...
Where did you even watch it? Did you just find it?
It's on YouTube. The entire movie is on YouTube. It is dated. There are things that even for 80s were like, ooh. If you do want to watch it, what I'll say to you is I'm going to post up a making of documentary of it, right?
Cool.
Where I think it was made quite recently. So where somebody goes back and kind of looks at the making of it. That's really good. If you really do want to, the whole movie is on YouTube.
Are there maybe just some particularly good clips you could post?
There are a lot of, there is a really funny clip with a little girl who sells shit.
Literally?
She sells shit to people. Eric Idle begged to not be in the marketing of this movie.
Ooh.
He didn't want, and even it was so funny, you watch the different posters of the movie, the different regions that got marketed as a different type of movie. So in America, Cheech and Chong were massive on the front cover.
Right.
Because people didn't really know Monty Python.
Yeah.
Whereas in England, Monty Python are front and center.
Makes sense. Makes sense, yeah.
And then you had some other releases that kind of had a little bit of everybody. So,
but I'm guessing it must have been a humongous flop because I've never heard of it.
Huge flop. Budget was about 10 to 13 million. It made 4 million at the box office. John Cleese, who we know is notoriously grumpy, called it one of the 6 worst films ever made.
I'd love to know the rest of that list.
I think John Cleese has made 6 worst movies himself.
Mm.
The director, he had no control. Everyone was stoned. Everyone was fucked. The thing is, it is true when you watch it. There's kind of if you think Monty Python is funny, and then you go Mel Brooks, his stuff is funny, and then you go Cheech and Chong, they're funny. Okay.
But not when they're all mixed up together.
And you get that because you go, because in Cheech and Chong aren't really Cheech and Chong. They're trying to be Python-esque.
Mm.
And then the Mel Brooks guys are kind of you think this is fucking gold, but it's just this weird mishmash of nobody really, the Python guys are kind of pulling their punches and then the other guys are trying to be Python. And it goes, it
sounds like a disaster.
It really should work. So badly, it's such a disaster. Marty Feldman died during the production of this movie. He had a heart attack.
Ooh,
right? So
shame.
He died during the production. So they had to finish the movie. And of all of those, nobody really wants to take ownership of it. Some of the reviews of the time, of New York Times, a buried treasure of wasted talent. Good pun on the part. A Variety said, a comic mutiny where no one survives. LA Times, if you're a Python fan, consider this a hostage situation.
Ooh, it's harsh.
And Gene Siskel of Siskel and Ebert says, Yellowbeard makes Caveman look like Shakespeare. Ooh. Now, Caveman was, I think, Eric Idle's movie? Yeah, or is that the Ringo Starr movie?
I actually don't know.
Caveman was the Ringo Starr movie. done by, anyway, so you know what you are dealing with. So, if you want a movie that's not quite anything...
Doesn't sound like something I actually want to watch.
Exactly.
But the making of might be interesting.
Yeah, look, it's one of those things, like I say, I love shit with people who should have known better.
Yeah.
And especially David Bowie. Says, if you want to see what happens when every sketch comedian you know walks into the same bar and immediately loses the plot, it's Yellowbeard.
Oof.
That's why, Dory, so much diversity in yours. Just as we get into a space of where we're talking about serious podcasts that unpack the historical context of the country.
And then you bring Yellowbeard.
About a little girl who sells shit. this is why we're number 8 in the world, according to the rankings.
Yes.
We didn't get through another week without an 80s person dying.
I know. Oh my goodness.
I mean, 3 in 1 week, Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah.
Her of WKRP in Cincinnati, married to Burt Reynolds. So she passes away. And Ozzy Osbourne, lots of great tributes from his funeral. Rod Stewart was a little bit incensed. He is on a bit of a concert tour, you know. A lot of these artists only do heritage shows during the summer. And I shared something with you. So he plays, we'll pop this up, that 80 Show essay on Facebook. He plays, when he does Forever Young, he goes, you know what? It's a good time for me to do a tribute to Ozzy Osbourne. And we've got AI now.
Yep. Just because you got it doesn't mean you should use it.
You know, it's like we're getting to that age, but I really hope we don't like fall into that age. We go, you know, I really think that once a year, after a certain age, you should have to take a test to be able to use new technology, right? Mm. So it should be, are you allowed, like the 2 to 21, but kind of like a, okay, let me not shame you, a 61 upwards, right? Can I use technology? And if you don't pass this test, this is what happens when the elderly start using AI, right? Because Dory, explain to the people what they are going
I'm
to see.
I'm actually wondering though, if it was his idea or was it somebody younger's idea, like someone in his team? You're watching and you don't quite understand what's happening. There's Ozzy holding a selfie stick looking upwards. And then you notice that all the people standing next to him are also like famous musicians who've died over the years. Although Tupac's in there, debatable. So
the people in there, if you want to, yeah, so he's now, it's Ozzy Osbourne's up in heaven.
Yes.
And he's got a selfie stick.
Yeah, because it's all like white around him.
He's so happy to be dead now.
Smiling.
And he's taking selfies, but those like upward selfies.
Yeah, those like with a big selfie stick.
Now, firstly, I know they're not in heaven because selfie sticks only exist in hell. So this is why they banished there, right? He's taking selfies with Janis Joplin, Prince, Tina Turner, Bob Marley, Tupac, Aaliyah, Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, Kurt Cobain, Extension, Whitney Houston, Amy Winehouse, and George Michael.
And can I just say that Kurt Cobain does not look like himself because he's got this big smile. And when do you remember seeing Kurt Cobain smile widely?
AI. They probably all got seven fingers.
The AI is freaky on that one.
Okay, so
yeah.
In this video, it's now somebody filming it at the concert.
There's a lot of people missing from that list as well. Like, it's a very specific list.
Well, yeah, listen, it's very 80s. It's very, like,
I
maybe
suppose,
it's,
yeah. What,
it's like, and you, so Rod Stewart is singing. He's singing forever or lip syncing.
Yes, I don't think he's still singing.
Because his back is to the, his kind of back is to the crowd and he's looking up on this and
yeah.
You know, so you kind of go, okay, that's, so maybe you say, okay, maybe he didn't, I mean,
he obviously thought this would be cool.
He did. Again, after a certain age, you should not be allowed to use new technologies. I think a technology needs to be out for 5 years. Let's do it that way. Okay? A technology needs to be out for 5 years before people of a certain age can use it.
Mm.
And when I'm at that age, I'll be like, okay, I agree with it. We are not responsible enough.
Yeah.
You can't drive till you're 18. You can't drink because you're not responsible enough. Once you're over a certain age, you're not responsible enough to use technology, okay?
Specifically, AI.
Specifically. Now, we can defend Rod Stewart. Go, okay, maybe somebody younger or whatever. Unless this was AI'd, he looks up at it. It also included Jimi Hendrix and David Bowie. And he said, very sad, a lot of these people died because of drugs. And then turns around and says, I'm still here though.
Wow.
Maybe physically, but you fucking lost it.
Rod Stewart is definitely in his asshole stage.
He's in that stage,
he's like,
yes.
Grumpy old asshole guy.
Like that openly racist phase of your life. I will say whatever the fuck
anymore.
I want.
How old is he?
He's 80.
Mm.
I kind of love it. I got to be honest.
You know what would have been even funnier? If Keith Richards came out at that exact moment as well to join him on stage.
Now, Dory, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about the BBC, BBC Radio 2, have done opened a list of the ultimate 80s duet.
Right.
And you could vote on your ultimate 80s duet.
Totally haven't done that.
Okay, so.
It's too late.
Voting's closed. They announced it already, Dory.
Oh. Who won?
Let me tell. Where should I start? Top 10 or top 15?
I'm up for top 15.
Okay.
As long as they're all someone I know.
Right. So who did? If you remember back, I remember. I thought Islands in the Stream.
Yes.
With a Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers would win.
Yeah, I was like, that's going to be right up there, man.
Okay. Remembering it's British. So here goes the top 15.
Okay.
Philip Bailey and Phil Collins, Easy Lover.
Nice.
Okay. Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes, Up Where We Belong.
Fair enough.
Number 13, David Bowie and Mick Jagger dancing in the street.
Cool.
Good. Meatloaf and Cher, Dead Ringer for Love.
Do I even know that?
No. Huh. Number 11. This is where I was going to start. I was going to say, I'm going to give you top 11.
Okay.
Just to piss you off. Making it up to number 11, beating out Prince and Sheena Easton. You got the look. Beating out Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. Beating out Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald. Beating out Al Green and Annie Lennox, Dory. Beating out Bryan Adams and Tina Turner, Dory. At number 11, Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan, especially for you.
So British.
They beat UB40 and Chrissy Hynde.
Oh my God.
Okay.
That's just wrong.
Number 10, this is a weird one, but again, British. Elaine Page and Barbara Dixon, I Know Him So Well.
Oh, wow. I know that song so well because my parents loved that really? Song. Yes.
I saw
Isn't it from Chess?
Dory, well done.
It's from Chess.
You don't. You can listen to Shifty Records podcast.
As is One Night in Bangkok.
You see, you can listen to Shifty Records podcast and you can get facts that people don't. Dory just pulled that out of her brain right now.
It's been dormant for decades.
My
there it
word.
Was.
Because I don't know that song.
Yeah. So I went to go look it. I don't like it.
It's from Chess. Chess was a Broadway play and the music was...
One Night in Bangkok's from Chess, which is so awesome.
But
and then there's that schlock.
The ABBA mans were in there. The mans is from ABBA?
The mans is from ABBA.
Benny and Bjorn?
Okay.
The Bees?
Maybe.
Yeah. They wrote that song.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, they wrote that song. I don't know that song. I've never heard it until I was like, oh shit. This morning, East Coast Gold, love East Coast Gold, classic station. I was always on in my house. That song played. I was like, oh my God, the song plays
that's
at least three
so
times a day.
Funny.
I was like, I didn't even know that song.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, that's number 10. Number 9, The Communards and Sarah Jane Morris, Don't Leave Me This Way.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, Pet Shop Boys and Dusty Springfield. What Have I Done to Deserve
top
10? This? Yes.
Amazing.
Jennifer Warnes again with Bill Medley. I've Had the Time of My Life.
Fair enough. Dirty Dancing.
Freddie Mercury and Montserrat Cabal, Barcelona.
Yeah.
Very British.
Yeah.
Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush, Don't Give Up.
Hate
number
that song.
5. Top 4. Of course, he's got to get in there. George Michael and Aretha Franklin. I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
Great song.
Islands in the Stream at number 3.
Oh, okay. I mean, top 3 is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. But now I'm wondering what the hell's number 1.
If it was American, it's so funny how
it would
different
have been
it would
number
be.
Number 1, yeah.
This is where, yeah, so you're going to see the top 2. Under Pressure, Queen and David Bowie.
That is a banger.
It is. Do you, as a fan of both songs, do you get irritated when Under Pressure plays and people think it's Vanilla Ice? It kind of goes, ugh.
Nah.
Bugs me a little bit. I don't know. Number 1, you won't remember the initial list, but again, makes sense. And I've got a big problem here because I sense we're heading to a couple of years of this fucking our Christmases.
Oh,
like in
no.
a good way, like good but bad. But number 1, top 40 duets voted for by BBC Two radio listeners, Fairy Tale of New York, The Pogues, and Kirsty MacColl.
There's an agenda there.
Now, do you see
for
the problem?
Sure.
Do you see the
for
problem
sure.
here?
Yeah.
It took...
I mean, it's not a terrible song.
Love the song. It took 40 years.
Yeah.
For Wham to finally get Last Christmas to number 1, get it 2 years in a row. Suddenly we're in the pocket of Big Pogue.
Big Pogue.
And I mean, we see what's coming out. I don't wanna hate Fairy Tale of New York, but if you're stopping Last Christmas to be number 1, I got a problem.
Yep.
We see what's coming here.
Yeah.
This is the ghost of Christmas future.
Yeah.
Fairy tales of. Now, you see, funny, laughing lists, top 40s. But you see what's happening here. This is the agenda of Big Pogues. Did the Pogues invent
Wamageddon?
We're
becoming one of those podcasts.
Conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
We got to do it. We got to uncover, have the Pogues infiltrated the mainstream media?
Oh, my goodness.
Fuck.
We are going to compete with Joe Rogan.
Trump's tariffs stole our chappies. And other Pogues have stole our Christmas. Fuck, Dory.
That's terrible.
Thanks for joining me. Goodbye.
Bye.
Forever.